It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. You know, we spent about 6 months in Anchorage having a big debate about tennis courts. And it wasn't really a debate about courts per se, but more a debate about should the city accept money that had been appropriated by the state of Alaska for Anchorage to build indoor tennis courts in on the west side of town. One of the big parts of that debate was, where did this money come from? What was the process in deciding that we'd build these courts? And should we even accept it if we didn't have a full community process before it was appropriated? And that gave rise to some folks saying, maybe we need a better way or a different way of doing capital appropriations. And that's the topic of our show today. Is the process for appropriating capital projects the right process, or they need to be changes? So we've got a great panel of guests, and we're actually starting the show with a pre-recorded portion. I'm speaking right now on Monday with Senator Kevin Meyer, the co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee down in Juneau. Our regular airtime would not fit with his schedule and all the legislative activities, so he was gracious enough to come on to pre-record today so we can get sort of the inside scoop. Thanks for being with us, Senator Meyer.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Charles. I can't call in live on Wednesday, but Wednesday is definitely our busiest day, and that particular time is the busiest time. So I think this way we'll have plenty of time to discuss whatever you want to discuss.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for being with us. And I know that the finance committees and the finance committee chairs are the main conduits for how a lot of these decisions get made. Now, we have two budgets, right? We have the operating budget that pays for day-to-day operations of government, and the capital budget pays for one-time expenses, primarily mostly construction projects, although there are other things put into it, and they range from tiny little things that maybe a piece of playground equipment for an elementary school to huge projects like a gas line or a dam. Can you give us a sort of a sense of how the budget is put together? Obviously, the governor prepares a budget, and then it comes to you, and then you start taking individual legislators' wishes and putting them on a list and deciding which ones are in and which are out.
Yeah, in a nutshell, that's right, Charles. But it's a pretty complicated process, and one that takes up. The requests basically come from the municipalities and the various communities, and of course they're working up their lists all year, and first they'll submit them to the governor probably in like August or September, and then he works on his operating and capital budget to present to us in December. And usually the main focus is on the operating budget, because you got to make sure you have enough revenue, enough money to cover your ongoing day-to-day state government operations. And that's why the capital budget is always done last. It's the last appropriation bill that we're going to take up before we adjourn. And the primary reason for that is that, okay, you want to make sure after you've funded, your big things like education and the unfunded liability and health and human services, public safety. Once you've made sure you have enough money to fund those, then you look and see, how much money is left over, or what are we comfortable with dipping into our savings to use for capital? And like you said, capital can be anything as small as a playground equipment and as large as a gas pipeline. And these requests are submitted by...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but isn't there also, it's sort of the legislative trading stock to some extent, where getting your project is a plus, and you're trying to, there are different interests involved, and is that a reason for wanting to be at the end too, so that sort of the deals can be made? I mean, that's certainly the impression the public has.
Well, I don't think so, and I wouldn't call it trading stock. I think that we wait to the very end again just to see how much money is left over, and we also do what's called a spring revenue forecast that kind of gives us the best guess on what the price of oil is going to be and what production is going to be. And again, you keep in mind our fiscal year goes July 1 to July 1, so we're forecasting almost 15 months out in some cases on what production and the price of oil could be. So we're waiting for the very last minute to try to get the best guess we possibly can. And I don't know that there's a whole lot of trading done because, like I said, sometimes there isn't a capital budget. There just isn't any money left over, or we're not comfortable in dipping into our savings to fund it. And we have been prioritizing the capital requests. The number one priority is to finish projects that have already started. So like this year, we're going to try to finish off the engineering schools at the UA and UAF. And there's what's called a SLAM building down here in Juneau, State Library and Museum. So that's number one priority. And the second priority is then to make sure we maintain the existing state assets that we have. And we have a lot of them all throughout the state. And then if there's money left over, then we'll look at, you know, priorities of the various municipalities and boroughs, communities throughout the state.
So one of the complaints that was raised during the tennis court issue was, why didn't we know about this sooner? We could have debated it. And there were a lot of things, you know, people saying, well, public sector shouldn't be building and competing with the private sector and many other things. And I know that you're an advocate of public open meetings because when you and I were on the assembly, we wrote the local open meetings law, right?
Yeah, you know, that's right. We did.
We were partners on that. So, you know, so one of the concerns that's been raised by Dermot Cole, who's going to be on the show with us later, is, well, why not just open it up so everybody knows what everyone's asking for and there can be a more complete debate?
Sure. Yeah. Dermot's been asking about how we can make the process, you know, more open for a while now, even prior to me becoming the co-chair of finance, and I think his main concern is, you know, the CAPSIS program itself and you know, the various nonprofits, municipalities, they put in the request through this CAPSIS system, which is basically just a working document done on the computer that, you know, we get their input off of that, and it is public. Everything that the city is requesting is probably been vetted by their local assembly and the mayor. It's just that it's for us, it's just a working document until we put the actual budget together. And then once the budget's put together and the items that are in the budget, then yeah, that information, the backup information, is all open to the general public. But we probably last year had over $4 billion worth of requests in CAPSIS. And I'm corrected, $3.1 billion. and we only ended up adding $200 to $300 million. So a lot of those projects never even got considered or included. So I guess you could say there really isn't any need or reason to see most of the information because most of it's not even considered. Now, in the case of the tennis courts, what happened was, even again prior to me becoming chairman, Senator Stedman and Representative Stoltz were the co-chairs, and the city of Anchorage has a lot of Project 80 projects that they usually request the state to help maintain, take care of.
These were those projects that were built during the 1980s, during the big oil years, and they're getting kind of old now and need to be refurbished.
Yep, that's exactly right. And so you, Charles, you remember the book that we would put together for the legislature is quite thick, and obviously we're not going to fund most of those things because we can't afford it either. So what we did last year, and again the precedent was set the year before, is we just said, okay, here's, I think it was almost $28 million when it left the Senate, and we do the. What happens is we do the capital budget first on the Senate side, and then it goes over to the House. The House has it last. So when it left here, it was at about $28 million there were so many different Project 80 items. We just said Project 80 items, and City of Anchorage, you decide how best to use that money. And the mayor wanted it that way, too, because he said, you know, we might think it takes $5 million to replace the boilers or the fixed roof on the Sullivan Arena, but really it was only $3.5 million. So we'd like to have the flexibility then to use that money elsewhere, which makes sense because you never know for sure what something's going to cost. So we We just said $28 million for Project 80 items, and then and of course Dempsey Anderson is included as a Project 80 item, and so then it went over to the House, and the House added another I think $7 million, $7 or $8 million, you know, because again the lobby and the Assembly came down here and they said, well, we need more because we have a lot of requests for Project 80s. So that's basically what happened, mm-hmm. and then of course then it gets fully vetted, as you said, in almost 6 months worth.
But in terms of the outcome, it seems like that there are annual surprises. I mean, there's things that pop up that people really weren't aware of, and I wonder if, just a sort of last question, do you feel like there is some room for improvement in terms of opening this process up so that people really do have a sense from the legislative level, you know, whether the city has done their job or not, that they really have a sense that these things have been looked at and that they've had a chance to comment on them?
Well, I think we can always get better as far as involving the public. No question about that. But certainly, as you know, the legislative request list that comes to us has a public hearing at the Assembly level. Then when we put the budget together, we have several public hearings on the budget that we propose. And then it goes over to the House, and they do the same thing. So the public has many opportunities to weigh in on the capital budget and what's in the capital budget.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Senator Kevin Meyer, Senate Finance Chair. We've been pre-recording our conversation today on Monday, and in a moment when Hometown Alaska continues, we'll go to our live conversation and we'll welcome your phone call. So stay tuned as we can talk about the capital budget on Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth, and today we're talking about capital projects, the process that led to what's been called the Great Tennis Match of 2013. That was the extended debate that we went through as a community as to whether the municipality should accept a $10.5 million appropriation to build indoor tennis courts, and how that project came about when no one seemed to know about it in advance, and it got stuck into a bill that was for revamping of older facilities. We're now live in the studio. I have two guests, L.V. Gray Jackson, assembly member for the Midtown area, and who is intimately involved in this and had concerns about it. Thanks for being with us, L.V.
I'm honored to be here, Charles. Thank you.
And Eric Croft, he's a member of the Anchorage School Board, but I invited him as a former member of the Alaska State House. Thanks for being with us, Eric.
Great to be here.
Both Democrats. We heard from Senator Meyer, who's a Republican. I did put out a request to get another Republican voice on, but was unable to after a number of calls. So this is the panel that we're left with, and hopefully we'll have a good discussion. But first I want to go to Dermot Cole, who is with us from Fairbanks. Dermot is a journalist with the Alaska Dispatch, and he kind of inspired me to do today's show because during the Great Tennis Match of 2013, he wrote some provocative columns about how the way the legislature does business leads to some unexpected results and problems that maybe could have been avoided. And I want to thank you for being with us, Dermot.
Thanks, Charles. Great to be here.
So you heard Kevin Meyer's comments essentially defending the way the capital budget is put together. What are your concerns? What do you think should be changed?
Well, I thought he made the case quite well for the status quo. I just happen to think the status quo is all wrong. And let me start with a few things here. The idea that we wait until see how much money is left over and then decide what to do is sort of a notion we can't afford. to tell you the truth. I mean, and we also shouldn't be basing it on what the spring revenue forecast is and what the price of oil is going to be. The whole there's a lot of assumptions that go into the way the legislature operates with the regard to the budget that really need to be changed.
So you're thinking that it should be more needs-based. Figure, what do we really need to build rather than how much money do we have to blow?
Well, yeah, how much money do we have left over than we can spend? I mean, you could make a good case that we have no money left to spend because we're in this fiscal year we're running a $2 billion deficit. So how we have any money left to spend is, you know, it just needs a the legislature is subpar as far as I'm concerned in terms of the way it deals with the budget. And there's probably a lot of reasons for that, but it really is deficient. To get specifically to the capital budget, there are no real public hearings on the capital budget as it appears in the final days of the session. And so there are public hearings on the early version of the capital budget, but that doesn't really count. What counts is what shows up in the budget within the last 2 weeks of the session. Senator Meyer's argument that, you know, we don't really need to see all the projects that are requested. Well, I would say we do need to see the projects that are requested. We need to see how the legislature managed to, you know, approve one and then disapprove something else. Finally, I could go on here, Charles, but one other point I'd like to make is the assumption that these projects are vetted is not correct. Well, not the assumption, the assertion. And the tennis courts, for instance, is just one small example. There are many others of projects that are never vetted on the local level or the state level. And really, the CAPSA system ought to be open to the public. And what I really object to, among other things, is that lobbyists, I know there are lobbyists who are given CAPSIS accounts and are able to enter projects into this system, and no member of the public has the ability to find out what has been proposed, and I just think that's wrong.
Let us know what the CAPSIS system is. This is a computer that they use to keep track of requests?
Correct. I'm sorry, I used the acronym. This is the system that's been in place since 2007. It seems to operate with sort of unwritten rules set by the chairman of the finance committees, and it is basically to computerize the system of capital budget requests. And every legislator has an account, and in which they can enter projects. And legislators also have the ability to give subaccounts to lobbyists and to municipal and to municipal governments and others. So you have a case where a lobbyist represents a local government and other organizations. The lobbyist can enter projects for the other organizations with no local vetting. There's a whole lot of things wrong with this, and the legislature is incapable of analyzing it.
Well, we're talking a lot about process, and you know, some voters, some listeners would say, well, who cares, right? And do hand out the money however you want to. But what's the practical impact of it? What happens that's bad because we have a process that's not as good as you think it should be?
Well, I happen to think that the tennis court issue was so basically almost unimportant in the big scope of things. I mean, it's a very, very small item. But we've had much larger projects and much larger decisions that are made in the same manner. To be blunt about this, the truth on the tennis courts is that the information about justifying them was not made available to the public for 2 months after the legislature adjourned. I think it was at least 6 weeks. And so when you have that kind of system that doesn't allow for disclosure, it's the maximum political power among a few individuals. That's the way you retain power, by doing things quietly, secretly. By having more exposure, it would just be a better system all the way around. And really, the system has, you know, when Chancey Croft was the president of the Senate, the system, there was less money to spend. We've advanced a lot since then in terms of the technology available to spread information. And there's no reason why everybody in the state can't know what has been proposed for the capital budget.
All right. Thanks. Dermot Cola is with us from Fairbanks. And the show is Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about the way the state of Alaska spends its money, what projects get built, and who gets to decide. And does the public really have any real input into this? Do we really have a authentic say in what's decided? You do have input on our show, however. We'd welcome your calls and comments about the tennis court controversy or anything else on the topic of how capital projects are decided. You can get on the phone from Anchorage by calling 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're out of Anchorage, there's a toll-free number, 1-888-888-888. 353-5752. And our email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I get those emails right here in the studio, and we'll read them on the air. LV Gray Jackson, you had a lot of concern about this tennis court issue. There was a $10.5 million appropriation that just kind of show up unexpectedly. Had you heard of it before? Had there been any discussion prior to it being appropriated, whether this was something community wanted, or how did it show up?
I really appreciate Dermot's comment in terms of doing things secretly. That's a big problem within our local community here, and that's why we're where we're at with AO 37, frankly. Mm-hmm. But the tennis court,
ordinance.
The labor ordinance, right. The tennis court, no, nobody knew anything about it. We have a process here in Anchorage where we do our operating budget and our capital budget at the same time. Our capital budget is, the funding is either a state request, a federal request, or bond. And nowhere in any documents that we received did we see any tennis court. Nowhere. It just magically appeared. And that's a problem because we have a public hearing on the capital budget process. Community councils are involved, and they were not on this particular issue.
Mm-hmm. So you would like it to see it opened up and have, I mean, or should, do you think, I mean, the legislators, they have their own elected power. You have your elected power. They have their elected position. And maybe they say, well, I think there should be tennis courts. Why shouldn't they be able to do that?
Because the tennis courts were for our community. Okay, and the process failed. Okay. Point blank, the process just simply failed. We, the tennis courts, as I mentioned a moment ago, were nowhere on our capital budget request, mm-hmm. which gives the public an opportunity to testify and say, yeah, we really like this, or no, we don't like this. They, mm-hmm. the public did not have that opportunity until everything hit the fan.
Right.
That's when they had the opportunity. And it's just wrong. Even when, I mean, oftentimes, even when the Assembly passes the capital budget and legislative program, things happen in Juneau. But when things happen, we're supposed to, the Assembly, the legislative powers of this government, we're supposed to, according to the law, amend the capital budget to reflect any changes that have been made.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, that didn't happen. Number two, what we approved was funding for Project 80 projects, and a new tennis court does not fit that description.
Right. It was put into something that was sort of essentially inapplicable to what it was. So,
absolutely.
So you wanted to just turn down the grant, send it back to the state, and get it reappropriated later? Or how, what was your... And I know there's a compromise where $4 million
was taken.
Yeah.
I felt that all of the money should have been used for Project 80 projects. In particular, our library that has fallen to pieces as I speak right now.
Mm-hmm.
That $10.5 million should have been used for the library. Although we looked into it and we were told by legislature that we could not use that money for libraries. And that's too bad because they requested funding at the same time that folks were down there requesting funding for tennis courts. I think it was the same amount. But the tennis courts got the $10.5 million slapped in with our Project 80 grant request. And it has nothing to do with Project 80, but the library does. Mm-hmm. And it was just wrong.
Yeah. So, Eric Croft, you served in the legislature. What do you feel is the reason why it's done this way? And this isn't the only sort of surprise project that's popped up where people didn't expect it or know it was coming. And in fact, there's a kind of tradition in Alaska where everybody gets the capital budget after it passes and goes through and sees what's there, right?
Or sitting on the floor when it comes, you're about to vote in a second and you're trying to figure out whether things you wanted got on, things you loved got knocked off. I think the legislature does a particularly poor job of this. And I was telling you before the air, we went on the air, I think the Assembly does a better job. My theories were two, and you added an important third one, that the Assembly is closer to the people, more local, and at least ostensibly nonpartisan. And I thought that contributed to you guys having a better but not perfect process. You added the very important third one, which is the Assembly has to follow the law. And the legislature, unfortunately, exempts itself from all these laws, open meetings and these disclosure laws. Let's be clear about how little public notice there was on this. Chairman Meyer was absolutely right that the Senate traditionally writes the capital budget, passes it over to the House, and then in the final, the House will add and subtract and then send it to the Senate for a final concurrence. So the Senate gets that one late. with the House doing its last changes, and the kind of opposite does on the operating budget. The House starts it, the Senate gets it, and then the House has to concur late. But on the capital budget, this was originally $28 million, he said that, and that's right. And it was very specific about what Dempsey Anderson would get down to. The TPS, which is Total Project Snapshot, of the project that is a backup in that CAPSIS system, $150,000 for parking lot expansion, $150,000, $100,000 for upgrade to facility lighting, that level of detail. When it comes back, it's gone from 27 to 37 million, 28 to 37 million, up 9 million. And it is a totally different TPS. That is a totally different. Now it's all grouped together in the 37.
So all the details have been scrubbed out?
All the details scrubbed out. And now is the first mention, but it's really hard to tell from that TPS. It does mention tennis and indoor facilities, even making it seem like a multi-use facility. In fact, they call it a multi-use facility, even though it's really all tennis courts and like a half a basketball court stuff in the end. But the most important problem with it is this amendment, this change that the House did, happened the Saturday before a Sunday adjournment. So even if you'd been waiting for this, you had read the Dempsey Anderson one, you were on top of it as a public member, assuming you could get into CAPSIS, as Dermot recommends, and I think he's right, you'd be sitting there as you went to bed on Saturday night thinking that's what was happening. Sunday morning, when they kick it over for a Sunday afternoon vote, you have this, and it's not clear that that backup ever became available to anyone. If it did, it was with hours of notice rather than anything else. So Elvie's exactly right. A premise of our system is that the public has a right to respond to what we're doing, and a premise of that is that they know what we're doing, have some way of knowing.
But isn't that part of the tradition in Juneau, is that you guys always did everything at the last minute, and there'll be huge, numerous big bills that come through that are passed in the last waning hours of the session, and sort of everybody holds their breath to see, you know, phew, this legislative session is over. They can't do any more damage. You know,
right.
It's like that. That's isn't that the way it's always been done?
It's a tradition and a really, really poor one for the public process. It's also a tradition for the legislature to exempt itself out of the laws it passes for everyone else to comply with. And I think that's a really poor tradition.
So with regard to open meetings, they can, LV on the assembly or you on the school board cannot meet with your colleagues except in public. You have to put out a public notice, and
right,
then they have to be able to be there. But the legislature, they do most of their business in private, don't they?
That's right. And I've sponsored, you know, amendments or bills to make us, put us under that, to have us comply with it, to change our rules to comply with it. The legislature just has always wanted to be exempt from it. And it changes, as you and I have discussed, the way we do business. I've had to be more careful, and appropriately so, on the school board. You know, if I'm talking to one person, or I can talk to two. When I talk to three, that's members of the school board, that's a quorum of it. Or if I talk to a quorum of any particular committee, you got to be very careful, and you should be.
Mm-hmm. Dermot Cole from Fairbanks, do you think that changing the open meetings law or somehow making it applicable to the legislature would be a solution to this problem?
Well, I think part of the issue here, actually, you don't have to change phones. This one's dying on me. But part of the issue, I believe, is the general legislative approach to disclosure. And I think it's far too secretive. And I'm really not really sure that there's any easy solution to this, except it has to come from outside the legislature. I mean, really, I know Eric might really have something important to say on this, but the legislature has never really had a thorough examination of the way it does business, ever, since Alaska became a state. And there's a whole host of practices that ought to be reviewed, and I think I'd put this one near the top.
Isn't that kind of up to the news media and the public and the way we use our votes at election time to make that happen? And if we haven't, then maybe we don't care.
Well, the news media has this big responsibility in this, but we haven't done the job. And I include myself in that. I'm not, you know, saying that other people have failed where I've succeeded. I just think reporters in Alaska haven't pushed this enough. Going back to this specific item, there are many others just like it. that show up by surprise. And I think it's outrageous to have, you know, items appear like, you know, as if Santa Claus left them on Christmas Eve, you know.
Kind of did, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to get into more of that in the second half. We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, I'm going to give out the phone numbers for listeners who might want to join our discussion about how the legislature does its business, how the legislature spends our money. Does it need to change? Are there projects that you are unhappy to see that showed up, as Dermot Cole said, as if Santa brought them on Christmas morning? So we're going to continue that in 1 minute as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Our subject today is how the legislature spends our money, how capital projects are approved that show up. These would be roads, public buildings, playground equipment, schools, all kinds of things. Basically anything that is a lasting fixed asset. And as we discussed in the first half of the show, there's a process which is defended by folks who were using it. And we heard from Senator Kevin Meyer, who's a Republican from Anchorage and co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, feels like the process is a logical one in which they wait to the last of the session, find out how much money is available, and then allocate it using requests that come from communities and from legislators. We also heard from Dermot Cole, who's a journalist with Alaska Dispatch in Fairbanks, who's written about flaws in the process and the lack of transparency and the fact that projects do seem to show up at the last minute. That happened in Anchorage last year with some indoor tennis courts that are going to be built in West Anchorage. There was a appropriation that was put into the budget that the assembly did not expect, and there wasn't much public notice, and that became a large controversy. So we have LV Gray Jackson with us as well. She's a member of the Anchorage Assembly who was concerned about that. We also have Eric Croft, who is a school board member and a former member of the legislature, to give us insight into how the system has worked. And we'd love to hear from you. How did you feel about this tennis court issue? Was it a tempest in a teapot? Are you truly concerned about the public process in Juneau? Or is it just something that doesn't really matter? I mean, they're handing out oil money and someone's going to get it, so let them do it the way they want. I would really like to hear what people think about this and if they care. The number is 550-8433, 550-8433. That's if you're in Anchorage. If you're calling long distance, it's toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Eric Croft, one of the things that happens every year is that individual parents and PTA members will go to the legislature and request improvements for their local schools, and legislators will put those into the capital budget, and then they show up even though the school board may not have been aware of them. And I know you're going through a controversy now regarding a football field at South High School, which was not something the district had requested, but some parents got it put into the budget. I don't know the answer to this, but did you do that when you were in the legislature? Did you stick some of those goodies in there?
Yeah, and so I even had a kind of surreal discussion on the school board to say, when somebody said, look, these are not our requests. We as the school board have different priorities. We have health and safety priorities. So we want to, the implication was, we want to scrap these requests that have kind of bubbled up and write our own that emphasize, security, response to calm line like incidents if we have them, so those kind of things. And I had to say, look, be very careful with that. Legislators do value that communication that comes through, and in effect they're going to say, none of your business, school district, to tell me I can't put new computers or a new swing set at my local elementary school. So we can't filter it. What we've come up with the school district that I think works is we don't filter it. We say kind of here is what has come up in their requests. It's not our highest priority, however, and sort of put on the top of it, we think these are the higher priorities, but allow that communication. But I mean, for the very reason that Dermot articulated, that the communication is important, that we shouldn't filter it or delete it, but the public should be able to understand what has been requested, by who, and comment the way Elvie talked about have a rational discussion. Should this, is it more important that this go into a library or a tennis court? And the public should be allowed to be heard on that, and legislators should hear that. And if they want to make a decision that disagrees with their constituents, they have to pay the consequences. But at the very least, have these things dealt with in the open.
So have problems been created for the district when requests come through that were not district priorities? I mean, obviously, this South Anchorage football stadium is something that the neighbors of the school didn't want, and it's now gone in front of the Planning Commission, and I think you got a negative vote on that, and you're still working through it. Is that indicative of the fact that you kind of didn't want it in the first place, and now you're trying to deal with something you didn't want?
Well, whether it was not our highest priority, and that was true of the stadium's request generally. It was a high priority for the group requesting it and for the legislators that saw that it got put in. And then we're in the uncomfortable situation of saying either no thank you, and because almost any capital request is going to have ongoing operating expenses that we're going to have to eat. We made the decision that while it wasn't our highest priority, it was an appropriate thing in most areas. You're almost seeing us getting no good deed goes unpunished when we say, okay, that wasn't our highest priority, but we'll accept them. And now a segment of the community is angry about it, something that we hadn't actually requested mm-hmm. in the first place. But I do think at the highest level, it's this, how can we be more open and transparent? And you couldn't really design a system that was less transparent than the capital project and capital budget approval in the state.
Mm-hmm. Dermot Cole, are you still with us? Dermot? I think we lost Dermot. Maybe we can get him back up online.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
I had my phone on mute. Sorry.
No problem.
But I did. I could hear every word that Eric said, however. So.
Excellent. Well, I just wanted to ask you the same question I've asked it of Eric and Elvie here in the studio. Legislators also respond to the public. They're elected to represent districts. In some cases, their districts might be quite a bit smaller than an assembly member's district or certainly an area-wide school board. So they might be more responsive to an individual school. Why shouldn't they be able to put their own stuff in there?
I think it would be fine if they did. I just would like them to give public notice about what they plan to do, as opposed to just doing it all in secret. Let's look at another example, a big example in Anchorage of using the capital budget to override the wishes of other entities, and that's the new basketball arena, which was placed in the budget.
You're talking about the UAA Sports Center?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is for basketball, not hockey. It should, I mean, it's clearly, you don't have to, I mean, it makes no sense to have build this just for basketball. But here we spent $100 million on it. And it got in the budget when the Board of Regents had much higher priorities. In fact, this wasn't even on the priority list. But, you know, Anchorage business leaders got together with several legislative allies and put it in the budget. And then a part of it was funded by a statewide bond issue, which was constructed in a Christmas tree fashion, you know, with a little something for everybody. And, you know, this process, if we just use the tools that exist today for technology of spreading information as opposed to spreading talking points about, you know, trying to gain an advantage over other people, if we just spread the information out, I would have much less of a problem with it. I mean, going back to the basketball arena, had the legislators and the Anchorage business leaders dealt with this in the open with the Board of Regents. You know, it wouldn't have been resolved yet, but I mean, there's conflicting issues there. So what do we have? Well, we have engineering buildings that have not been funded. Now, Senator Meyer said the engineering buildings in Anchorage and Fairbanks will be a priority this year.
Right. There's one each for UAA and UAF engineering buildings that are partially funded, right?
Right. But again, the governor has submitted his capital budget, and it doesn't pay for most of the cost to finish those buildings. So I would like to see some attempt at statewide priorities. And
so you're saying it not only is it not public enough, it's a bit too ad hoc, and the decisions don't make a lot of sense all the time.
Well, I think we have a system that dates from an era where we had more money to spend than we do today.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, in the early 80s, when the capital budgets first exploded, everything was funded, just about everything. And there were thousands of projects were funded, and we're still kind of living with that system. And mm-hmm. there's no attempt to set statewide priorities. I mean, why weren't they funded last year? I mean, they should have been a statewide priority. I think really the governor has to exercise more budget control. Now, people in the legislature won't like that, but I think that's where it has to come from.
Yeah. Let me turn to Paul, who's calling from Anchorage. Paul, did you have a question or comment?
Yes. A part of it is, when I think about it, if we don't like what legislators are doing, then there is an elective process, right? And we can vote them out if we find that they are not following what we consider to be good priorities. Because I'm trying to imagine the public getting involved in everything, and I don't know. You know, if you've gone to these public meetings, it seems like at times you get the same 20 people on a particular issue saying the same thing over and over again, and it's really not quite what we imagine the public process to be, I think, in many instances. I'm saying it, too, has its own limits.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying we've got a representative government. You've sort of got to get people you trust and let them go down there and do their business the way they see fit.
And when you don't like what they're doing, then there's the elective process. Perhaps a part of it is that under a certain amount of money, maybe we don't need it. Because, you know, are we saying if they appropriate $8,000 to restore a boat, that there's going a required public process, or $6,000 to repair something on a ferry? I just don't quite picture how practical going down this road is, at least without some guidelines or perspective. And I'll be interested in what people have to say on your panels.
Yeah, let's go around the panel and get a response to that. LV Gray Jackson, a member of the Anchorage Assembly, I know you have public process covering every single thing you put in the capital budget. Who comes out and speaks on that? Do people get involved?
People do get involved, and obviously the public process did not occur for the tennis courts. But let me give you an example of following the public process, and I'll use the tennis courts as an example. Well, Mr. Traney and I, what we did for the 2014 capital budget process, we put in a line item asking the state for $10.5 million for a tennis court. That was the right way to do it. We had a public hearing. Nobody came out and testified. And that request is now down in Juneau. And if the Tennis Association really wants this tennis court, then they'll go back to Juneau and work really hard to get the legislators to fund it. And let me just also say this. Nobody is or has ever been against tennis courts. What folks were upset about was the process. And mm-hmm. It may not sound like a big deal to some people, but it is a big deal when you don't follow the law that you're required to follow.
So how do you guys put together your capital budget just to create it, to compare to the state level? I mean, what's your, it starts out at the community council level?
It starts out in February with the administration. It goes to the community council. They prioritize projects from project lists that are provided to them from the municipality, and then it goes back to the municipality, and the mayor and his staff, they build a capital budget that's presented to the assembly, and then through the process, the assembly, you know, we listen to our constituents and we make amendments and hope to get enough votes that the amendment passes. And Mr. Train and I brought forward an amendment to the mayor's capital budget to add $10.5 million for an indoor tennis facility. And that passed. So therefore, it was included in the capital budget. It was included in the legislative program. And it's down in Juneau right now, hopefully, and it'll be funded. But there's work to be done even mm-hmm. after we approve the budget, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Paul, is good enough?
Well, I think it's an interesting sort of consideration, but what's missing, I suppose, is so there is no bottom number by which this would go for statewide projects, public discussion. We're talking about $1,000, $700. It's all open.
I'm not sure. I think most of those small projects are. Let's turn to Eric Croft, who was in the legislature. How does that work when there's tiny little projects? Are you saying that those should be open for public testimony as well?
Well, you know, Paul asked whether $8,000 to build a boat or repair a boat, we have any right to know about it. Well, if it's repairing a lobbyist boat, I'd like to know about it. You know, depends on the boat, I guess. And all that that most of the discussion was about was making this process transparent. And so you are able to get on, and that's pretty cheap to do, and comment on it. And if you think it's worth your time, I think it should be worth the legislators or assembly members' time to listen to you on it. Now, you're right. Some meetings, we've all attended public meetings that worked very well, and some that drug on, some where the same people are testifying, but that is part of the process. I wouldn't put a minimum on disclosure, you know, and you can cap people at 3 minutes or 2 minutes, as we often do. And if they want to talk about an $8,000 for a boat, they must think it's important, or you just let them do it for 2 or 3 minutes. I think that's so much more, so much better than allowing it to be hidden in this way. And the other point Paul made, which is a good one, is that you can vote them out each year. But the fact that we have a representative democracy, that you have the power that so many people in the world don't have to unelect your representatives, doesn't justify a poor process. In fact, it makes it even more important that you have a good process, good disclosure, so you have good information about whether or not to knock that person out and put in someone else. So I think it reinforces that means I really, since I'm the decider as a member of the public, I need to know who's doing what and why.
All right. Thanks, Paul. We're going to go to some emails now. Mike in East Anchorage wants to know about the Bregaw overpass. I think he's probably talking about the UMED.
The UMED.
Yeah, and that was another one that kind of came in somewhat unexpectedly, isn't it? That $20 million to punch a road through from Bregaw to Elmore through the university campus. He wants to know whether it can be stopped, and he also says Elvery Gray Jackson is my hero, so a little advertisement for you. Have you been focusing on that issue, Elvy, and do you have any comment on whether that looks like it's going to be built or not built?
Well, I know that Representative Gardner has a bill to rescind, if you will, or give back the $20 million that's out there, because nobody thinks that the $20 million is going to be enough to cover it anyway. And our constituents, Mr. Training, my constituents, have adamantly opposed this project. And when you think about it, this project has been around for 20-plus years during the Mayor Fink days, and it's still here and about to come to fruition against the will of the public.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's Hometown Alaska. We've got about 10 minutes left for folks who want to get on the air with us. The email address is hometownalaska@alaskapublic.org. You can also call in 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. Turning back to Dermot Cole in Fairmix, Dermot, this argument has certainly been made many times. If you don't like what's going on in Juneau, just vote the people out. And I don't want to be a total heretic about the democratic process, but I've lived here all my life, and I haven't seen that process that really work. I mean, I don't really feel like I've seen reform occur at the ballot box with legislators being turned out because people don't like the way the capital budget's put together or something like that. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's probably true. I mean, incumbents have a built-in advantage, you know, by being able to use the powers of their office to run for re-election and campaign. One of the issues we might keep in mind here is that the lack of disclosure is an advantage to an incumbent on these projects, and so and by that I mean there's no way that an opponent would be able to make use of the information if something is performed with the by violating the rules. You know, the whole process needs to be revamped and rescheduled, and one of the key items is not doing it at the last minute. There are states where there's a rule that the budget information must be prepared at a certain enough at a time so that there's adequate ability to have real public hearings on them. And there are no real public hearings on the final versions of the capital budget. It just doesn't happen. And I know why incumbents want to keep it the way it is, but it does not serve the public's interest to do it this way. Not just in Anchorage, it's in Fairbanks and all other parts of the state. There are many things funded that probably shouldn't be funded now based on our revenue situation.
I find, this is just my own comment from my experience formerly in public office, is that there's political benefit to be gained for a politician in getting a project through the process, whatever it is, but there's not much benefit to changing the process itself. I mean, you're not likely to win a lot of votes from your particular district because you made a good government change to the process, but you are if you get them a new fire station. So, in some sense, we have to think about what incentives we create for the people we elect. Are we asking them to do something that's against their interests? So anyway, that's just my thought. Now I'd like to turn to Kirk. Well, did you have something to add to that, Dermot, quickly?
Yeah, just quickly that one reason why a politician would prefer a stadium and the school board member might prefer, building a new access point is that the stadium is politically more advantageous.
You can put it on a brochure, right?
Yeah.
All right, Kirk, you had a comment about the Bregarx engine?
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. My comment is that while the community council in the immediate area has been consistently opposed to that, there's a lot of public support for it, and there's a public need for it for access from the north to the university, and also, I think most importantly, to the hospital for emergency vehicles and so forth. And I think the reason that it's been around for 20 years is because there is a public need for that road. And, I think that the community councils have stymied it one way or the other. But I, for one, am glad that that road is going through. And I think that there will be adequate protection for people who use the trail system in there and for environmental concerns and hopefully for trail concerns. But boy, it is 20 years overdue.
All right. Good point, Kirk. I mean, the different levels of government represent different points of view at times. I mean, there might be a broader point of view and a narrow point of view, and somehow they have to be balanced. Elva Gray Jackson?
I just want to say, Kurt, thank you for your comments, because as an elected official in this community, I represent the interests of everyone. There are three, not just one, but three of Mr. Trainee and my community councils who have resolutions against the road being built. But then there are other resolutions, too, that they've brought forward, just asking to have more input. And I don't see a problem with that at all, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Thank you.
Thanks, Kirk. We're going to go to another call now. We have Jacob on the line from Chugach. Jacob?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm speaking as a parent as an educator as well. I've been pretty involved in talking to my legislators and others about school funding and, dealing with the cuts that we're facing this year and in the future. I've been really frustrated at the legislative grant request process, because I've had that used against me in a conversation where, say, lawmakers will say, well, listen, we're spending X amount of dollars on these projects. That's going to the school district. And in a time when, if we accept that, you know, we have declining revenue and, you know, we only have this finite amount of money, you know, we're cutting staff, yet we're purchasing things. And I think the process lends itself to not really being able to make those decisions of one over the other. There's just too many hands in it. The other thing I've been frustrated about is that as I talk to my neighbors and folks in the community, I don't think they fully understand that process. When they see a construction project going on at a school, or they look in the paper and see a new kiln that was put in for a school, or, you know, new computers that were installed, I think they just see that as school district purchasing things. And that, coupled with, you know, staff that are being eliminated or positions that are being eliminated, I think the process just lends itself to being really confused to the public. And, you know, ultimately it kind of means that the school district sort of takes it on the chin.
Yeah, that's a real good point, Jacob. Let me turn to my guest, Eric Croft, who is a school board member now and formerly a member of the State House. And I guess Jacob made a great point, and I guess I would sort of encapsulate it. How do we get a more logical, prioritized view of these things?
Could you create a less logical one? Yeah. With the different layers that we have between federal, state, and local, and then down to the district, with the capital and operating? Yeah, I mean, to put it simply, people said, and Jacob's absolutely right, how can you be building a tennis court that may not be needed and firing teachers? And you can either answer that with, no, you're right, that doesn't make sense, or give this long-winded discussion about the difference between capital and operating, the difference between state and school district. But fundamentally, it's all the same greenback money. And we in the school district have had to say over and over, oh, we can't print money, we can't tax for anything, and we really have a very restricted borrowing authority. We rely on what the state and the municipality give us. But I think he's right. It's a confusing process. The kind of you're seeing almost a groundswell now. You are seeing a groundswell, I think, that is saying we want more. We don't want those teacher layoffs, and we'd like more funding for the schools. And so that can blow past a lot of artificial explanations or barriers.
When people get involved in a big way, it tends to change some of these systems. We just have a moment left, Dermot Cole, but you cover the legislature. Do you have any sense that there is interest in changing the process, or are you just sort of...
Well, I think, unfortunately, I think there's no real interest in changing the process. And the... I mean, I just heard the other day of a lobbyist who entered a project into that computer system because the lobbyist happens to represent a municipal government and other clients, and the public has no access to what was being sought.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. That was Dermot Cole. He is a journalist with Alaska Dispatch, wrote some really interesting articles and columns on this topic, which you can find at our website, alaskapublic.org. Earlier, we heard from State Senator Kevin Meyer, Republican from Anchorage, who is on the Senate Finance Committee, co-chair, and he was talking in defense of the process. We wanted to have him for the whole show, but because of his schedule, we just had him for the first portion. Assemblymember Elvie Gray Jackson was with me, and also former Representative Eric Croft, who's now a member of the Anchorage School Board. Thank you both for being with me today. And next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Kathleen McCoy to talk about a new book on the media called The Influencing Machine by Brooke Gladstone. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolford.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.